Matt Lowe, and welcome back to Relatively Football. I've been eating healthy, I've been drinking coffee, but here you are at the first late night after dark Relatively Football episode coming to you on Friday afternoon out statewide and Friday night back home in England. I am Theo Lloyd-Hughes and I'm here with my sister, Flo. Are you ready to talk about women's football over some wine?
I am. Relatively Football after dark. And I actually feel like this would be a great vibe for some kind of Zoom hangout at some point. Maybe we should do like a Relatively Football meets after dark hangout where people can just like bring a beverage, a tea, a beer, whatever they want, and we just kind of, you know, shoot the breeze or whatever the cool kids say.
I love that. Yeah, it's kind of, listen, this is sort of accidental. We want to try and get these non-match day episodes to you on a Wednesday. So we've got like, we're trying to build some Sunday, Wednesday rhythm, but you know, Flo, life gets in the way. You've been very busy. So this is the time we've managed to eke out. And obviously England not playing until Tuesday. There've been a couple of international fixtures, including the beginning of the She Believes last night. But we felt like this was the best way to squeeze it in, eh, Flo?
Yeah, I mean, we actually timed it quite well, because if we had done it on Wednesday, we wouldn't be able to talk about She Believes. So Friday night, actually pretty good.
Went from being a She Believes preview to a She Believes review. Quick bit admin before we get to the She Believes Cup. And Flo, what's this episode going to be about? Give the listeners a little preview.
So we're going to be obviously talking about She Believes opening round of games that happened last night. And then we're going to be taking a little look at England, looking at the current squad that's gone to this camp that's going to be playing that game against Northern Ireland.
And also England special.
And also doing a kind of best 11, our takes on a best 11. But I think the disclaimer being the 11 that are fit and able to play now. So they could be
on
fit.
On Tuesday.
Yeah, they could be fit and not necessarily picked, but like, for example, Lauren James couldn't be one because she's injured. So, yeah, we're going to be talking about that. And as always, we'd love to hear your suggestions and who you would like to see in there. I'm feeling pretty confident about my starting 11. I did send Theo some fire emojis because on paper, I think my team could get to a European final. So just saying.
And there will be one next year, maybe. Well, look, let's get the admin and the housekeeping out of the way.
I think there'll be hopefully a final. Whether or not England will be in it is another question. But cheers.
If England get knocked out, we riot. yeah. Cheers. Okay, so yeah, bit of admin. You're listening to Relatively Football. Thanks for being here. If this is your first time, welcome in. Grab a chair.
If this is your last time, don't come back.
Don't come back. Goodbye. No, seriously, thanks for listening. And yeah, follow us on Twitter at Relatively Foot. No ball on the twits. But if you're into the Instagram, usually just me on the Instagram, not Flo, posting stupid memes or stats, follow us on Instagram at Relatively Football, whole thing on the handle on Instagram. The intro music that you just heard is by The Convenience, and the sibling interview episodes, which you should go back and listen to if you haven't, the music is by New Orleans band Video Age. All right, a couple of quick things I want to highlight from the news this week before we get to She Believes. The Black Sportswoman, Flo, have you heard about it?
No, I haven't.
It's an amazing new newsletter by Bria Felician. And you can go and donate on Patreon. You can sign up for it for free. I think the Patreon maybe gives you exclusive access, extra articles, or maybe you get to access old articles outside of the kind of in your inbox newsletter. I really recommend it. I've learned so much from it, including about England's first ever black female footballer. And it's really, really good. Great writer, great takes, obviously centering black women in all the kind of sporting global world. But yeah, really great writer and something I've really enjoyed in 2020 and 2021. But their piece this week on Crystal Dunn is a real must read. They're all must reads, but this week the Crystal Dunn piece was a proper highlight, so go and find it. Likewise, Molly McElwee. Am I saying that right, Flo?
Molly McElwee, I think, is probably McElwee. Better.
Yeah. Why is the England team so white? McElwee. Why is the England team so white? The Telegraph article I read today, big shout out to Fadumo for sharing that one, was a really good read as well, and something we talked about on the show, and something I think we're all kind of really focusing on in regards to pathways into the England Lionesses team. So yeah, really, really great thing to check out there.
And I think the reason I liked that piece so much is because it had young voices in it. And I think...
Yes, great, great quotes.
Like this, people have been talking about this, I guess, since last summer and the Black Lives Matter movement came over to the UK and then it had an impact on football and is still having an impact on football. I think people start talking about it then much louder than they had previously. It kind of been a conversation maybe in the background. And I think we talked about the topic, but we'd often ask current players about what they thought about it. And I like what Molly did by asking young people and people more on a grassroots level what the issues are and really spelling them out, because lots of people have opinions on it and saying, yes, you know, it's resources, it's locations and all these things, but it's good just to kind of package it up in, yeah, these are the issues and this is where we're failing. And it's going to be interesting to see how, you know, this FA grand plan does work out.
Absolutely. Final bit of admin in the news section of the beginning of this pod is, if you can, if you have the money, I know times are tight, I know COVID is hard, do look up Austin and Houston area mutual aid websites. If you need any more information, at me on Twitter. But Texas, the winter weather in Texas right now is really, really devastating. A lot of very vulnerable people who are already struggling from COVID, struggling from eviction, struggling with houselessness, and huge amounts of power, property damage, water shortages, food shortages is very serious in the state of Texas right now. Obviously, the government has completely fluffed it. But if you do have the means to help out people, I really suggest giving. And like I said, if you need help trying to find the right mutual aid groups in cities like Austin and Houston, let me know, because I would love to reach out. I've got friends there who are on the ground trying to do the right thing in what has been a very testing week, and our heart goes out on the pod. You know, Hurricane Harvey was really a huge moment in Texas in 2017, but I would argue this is, from a human angle, more devastating. Maybe not more as devastating from a property angle, but I think the human impact of this is going to be felt for a long time. And that is, you know, people with young children who are suddenly turfed out in the streets, living out in their cars, etc., to people trying to figure out where they're going to eat. And yeah, it's just, it's pretty scary.
Yeah, and I think what's even scarier is with the climate crisis, things aren't getting any better. And with most world leaders, if not all world leaders, not doing enough to tackle it, especially UK and US, yeah, things are going to get a lot worse before they get better, and it is very worrying about the future ahead.
Also, going back like to people's preparations, Houston is an amazing city for knowing how to deal with a hurricane. Hurricanes come through, you have your sandbags ready, you have your bottles of water ready, you have everything ready. No one was ready for this. And I know it sounds crazy. I know, I'm sure people in Chicago and DC are rolling their eyes. But honestly, just no one was ready for it. And so that lack of preparation, that lack of infrastructure is really showing. Anyway, like I said, if you have the means, if you can share the words, if you see anything on Twitter, just, yeah, every little helps. Anyway, let's get to football flow. She Believes Cup started last night. A lot of fun. Kind of made me miss it a little bit. No England this year, obviously.
Yeah.
But in a way, I watched it and I kind of had more fun than maybe England last year. I think you and me were texting a lot this time last year about it, and we were
that,
so
England
bummed out.
England last year
out.
Was turgid. It's
totally depressing. Lauren Hemp, looking back, the only thing I remember was that Lauren Hemp was amazing. But was I remember thinking how crap. Good Spain were and how crap we were. Anyway, so this time it's a lot more fun. Lovely little afternoon game or nighttime game back home. But for me, a little afternoon game. Brazil 4, Argentina 1. Marta Dabina Adriana, and a lovely goal of the day by Chiesi, pronunciation apologies already, on the Portuguese there for the last Brazil goal, and a lovely header by Laraquette, who has signed for Chiesi NWSL, so we're going to see her in the NWSL next season. Really cool to see, and lots of love for Lorena Benitez as well. So Argentina obviously on a bit of a hiding here, but Brazil are a fantastic side and you can't really expect much else flow. I don't know if you have anything you want to add on this game before we move on to the second game.
Yeah, I mean, the situation with Argentina, their federation is not acting in the best interests of women's football, as well as a few players that couldn't take part because of COVID.
Yes,
so,
for kind of people quarantining in the build-up
to
this game.
So they were already thin on the ground as it was. And yeah, it's a frustrating one because there is such a obvious lack of support from the federation and things could be a lot different, and I think you're just seeing that gap there And I think that's maybe the biggest takeaway from the result was fantastic for Brazil. And I guess Brazil have been able to achieve so much and perform so well despite the lack of support from the federation, just because of how big football is there, and how as individuals the individuals on that team have managed to progress, you know, a lot of them playing outside of their home nation. And you know, Marta's been quite vocal about this, about the lack of support to grow the game internationally beyond this generation who have worked tirelessly kind of with no support. But with Argentina it's kind of the opposite. They can't grow as individuals. They're not getting that to necessarily then like carry a women's football on their back, if that kind of makes sense. So yeah, a little bit frustrating, I guess, that they've been put in a position where they're basically set up to fail.
Well, except that this was a brilliant game of football played with loads of talented players bringing the sauce. And if and when the South American Football Federation do the right thing, I mean, you're going to see such a fascinating evolution going on down south. I mean, we are waiting for the investment in these nations, and they're going to be incredible because the quality of football is there. The footballers are there.
Yeah, I mean, there's so much raw talent in South America, and it's just a shame that the federations aren't supporting that.
Two heavily funded nations. USA beat Canada in the late game, the kind of opening, the big opener in Florida, in Orlando. Always weird seeing lots of fans in a stadium, but here we are.
Do you think it lived up to the hype, first things first?
I think it did. I thought this was a really good game, and the most I've seen the United States sweat since.
It was quite cagey, wasn't it?
Really cagey, really anxious, really tense. Really physical. I think Canada deserves so much credit for maybe being the first team in a long time to match the United States for physicality.
And they were pretty depleted as well. This is not full strength.
Oh my God, you're so
Canadian
right. Missing
team, so, I mean,
six
what,
players. Yeah. Yes. Some through French sides, Lyon, PSG not letting them out. Christine Sinclair had an injury. Bianca St. George has done an injury, which is really, really sad to hear about. And their keeper, Caelan Sheridan, did her quad 10 minutes into the game. I mean, everything that could go wrong went wrong for Canada. And they put up such a fight. Oh, my God. Love to see it. Love to see it.
And that's definitely a sign of exciting things to come, that a depleted Canadian side can really push USA to the absolute limit. Obviously, it's not a World Cup. It's not an Olympic Games where we know USA can just find that extra bit of juice that other teams can't find, but that's exciting for the future of women's football in general, because Canada have kind of just been these like nearly men for so long now, and like the idea with Bev Priestman appointment is that hopefully they can really maybe take them to the next level, because there's so much potential with that team they have now. So much potential. And there kind of always has been a lot of potential around the national team, but they've never quite been able to get to the next step.
We talked a bit last episode about Casey Stoney saying, oh, you know, title was a bonus. We were just in it for Champions League. I kind of want to apply that same mindset to this Canada match, because it's like, is a 1-0 loss, it's still a loss to the United States, but is that an achievement? You know, is Brev Priestman going to come away?
I don't know if you saw a lot of the dialogue on Twitter last night, which was actually, I saw it this morning when I woke up at like 7, I was flicking through, as you do, terrible for your mental health as soon as you wake up, go on Twitter. And there was a lot of dialogue about, I don't know who was the commentator?
Some man and Ali Wagner.
Because it was his name's also JP, like Jonathan Pierce. So okay. they were calling him JP, and I was like, but it's not Jonathan Pierce. I'm so confused.
He wasn't
but
very good.
He's also called JP. Anyway, this JP was talking in the comms saying, you know, oh, this is a good result for Canada. And lots of people were saying, you know, this is not a good result. And framing it like that just shows how you know nothing about women's football kind of thing. But I guess that is a discussion to be had about, well, think about the gaps there were before. Think about this Canadian side and the how depleted they are. I think there are some positives for Canada to take. I wouldn't say saying a 1-0 win they should be proud, 1-0 defeat they should be proud of is the worst thing in the world.
I think it differs a lot to a lot of the Americans I know. but I think this is something we have as English people or QPR fans. I don't know what you want to call it, but I think a kind of brave, to borrow a word from Beth Priestman, a brave loss is a good result. For me, if I was a Canada fan, I would love last night.
Yeah, I suppose it's that winning mentality.
Losers mentality, basically, which I have inherited.
Exactly. Yeah. It's the winner's mentality that USA have, where they're so used to winning that even a draw seems like a huge defeat. And then there's the loser's mentality that we as English football fans, as QPR fans, are so used to, which is, you know, a plucky 1-0 win where you could have scraped a point is still something to kind of cherish. So yeah, I see that.
Get back to us. Would you have taken a 1-0 loss before kickoff? Because I was supporting Canada last night. Shout out to Hayley, Hayley, who does the Houston Dash, actually Dash podcast. She was supporting Houston last night. Canada last night because of the Houston Dash players. And I feel like it was an emotional roller coaster, but I think, I don't know, I would have taken 1-0.
I think as Canada fans, they must have been, you know, before the game thinking 1-0 is pretty good, seeing who USA had at their disposal. I mean, playing someone like Megan Rapinoe was maybe slightly surprising.
Carly Lloyd.
Yeah, Carly Lloyd didn't actually play too badly last night, though, but given how little football she played. But Megan Rapinoe, I was surprised that she started. So I just thought they would go for the players that have played the most this season. But I suppose there's a lot of jet lag for the players coming over from England, especially. An interesting one, and one to keep an eye on with the Tokyo Olympics potentially on the horizon if they don't get cancelled.
Well, and I think it's one to watch. We joked, you've kind of mentioned it already this episode, we joked about it maybe a couple of months ago about, I always feel like Canada-USA is a sleeping rivalry. Like, it feels a bit like this could be a great rivalry. And I think you saw players like Quinn, Alicia Chapman, Jess Fleming, who was really physical and obnoxious last night. Chelsea fans are loving that. Like, you saw the Canadian players treat this like a derby, and that was just great.
I saw you upset when Adrenaline came on.
Well, I mean, one, I'm a Nichelle Prince stan. Two, I just, even though Adrenaline has played a lot of football, so you couldn't criticize her of rust, it just felt like she wasn't quite the player to jump into this feisty, physical affair that needed like a really consummate finisher. Janine Becky missed two massive chances. Oh my god. I mean, it was a funny old game.
They were bad.
It was a funny old game. The USA obviously missed a lot of chances. They looked super rusty, but Canada were really physical, crowded the box, played without possession really well. And when the chances did fall, they didn't take them. And who knows if, I mean, part of me feels like if Janine Becky had scored one of those, maybe the USA would have turned up the heat quicker and it would have ended like 2-3-1. So maybe the fact that it didn't go in kept the game more cagey. But for me, to bring on Adriana Leon, I was like, well, she's not going to finish that chance that Becky didn't finish. You know what I mean?
Last season, Becky missed a ton of good chances. This season, I thought we'd kind of, you know, moved on and progressed a little bit. I thought we'd seen signs.
It was early season Man City vibes.
Yeah, but this was just like that all over again. Exactly. It was, frustrating because that first chance she had where she just passed it into Neuer's hands, that was really like head in my hands moment. Like, I can't believe you've wasted the opportunity. At least make her work for it.
Well, and she ruined a great Nichelle Prince assist. This was the problem. Nichelle Prince was doing such fantastic work. Her touch
Justice
was a little,
for Nichelle Prince.
Her touch was a little heavy at the beginning of the game, but she really came into the game and kept Dalkamper and Becky Sauerbrunn really off their balance and was making so much space for other players, which, you know, for the Houston Dash, Nichelle Prince doesn't really play the number nine. So to see her as a forward who's kind of becoming a playmaking centre forward, like out of the blue for Canada, and to do it really well, she had a great game. You know, you were just waiting for something to happen and she needed the other players to step up and you know, it didn't. Other big shout outs, kind of, we got to wrap this game up, but Quinn was fantastic. Cool, calm, feathery touch, so confident in pressure. Yeah, really fantastic day for the midfielder. They were amazing. Really want to make sure that was known. Alicia Chapman for Canada at left back. Shout out Houston Dash. Oh my.
It was a Dash takeover.
Oh my lord. I don't know what Bev Priestman said to Alicia Chapman before the game, but she was playing like it was a cup final. Kristen Press looked great off the bench. Really, really lovely link up between her and Christy Mewis, who only got a couple of minutes, but that could be a cool partnership to see. Midge Purse, I thought, is kind of starting to break into the team, look good.
I know we've already gone over the time that we were going to talk about this game.
Yeah, we're way over.
But I do want to talk about the anthems, which we touched on before. I want to talk about really briefly.
Yeah.
Just about the contrasting approaches to it and the way that Canada approached it, their statement together, which, you know, slightly
unified.
Slightly cringe in some ways, but also unified. They took a stand together. They were very clear about what they were doing, where they, you know, their position on things and standing by each other and their teammates and a collective decision and a collective position on this. The same could not be said for the mess that was on the other side of the pitch with the US Women's National Team. Half up, half down.
Eight to three. It's not quite half.
Okay, eight to three.
Julie Ertz, Lindsay Horan, and Carly Lloyd. I'll name them.
Wearing those jackets. And I mean, I've said it before and I say it again. They need to come together and have a stance on this because it's only going to get more complicated and divide them as a group more and more, and it's dividing the fan base as well, which you don't want to see. And I'm going to come on a bit later when we talk about England about how well Vlatko's done so far to unite the group and already showing his culture, what he's about, who he is as a person, his personality, his laid back, friendly, approachable attitude, and how that's really rubbing off positively on the fans. And that's great, but he's still got this conundrum that he needs to sort out because it's not a good look.
Yeah, I feel like we could do a whole podcast on this, so I don't know where to jump off on. But yeah, I think it was pretty disappointing. I mean, there's so much to say, but look, I'm going to keep it simple. Whatever Crystal Dunn does is what you should do.
Yeah.
And that's it. All right, we've got to move on because
I was going to talk, but
what do you want to say? What do you want to say?
No, I was just going to say, we already have the conversation about these things just being symbols and not really
performative activism.
Yeah, it's just being performative activism. So there's no better way to demonstrate that than to be wearing a jacket that says Black Lives Matter and not kneeling with your teammates. So I think if that's going to be the case, then you need to do away with the whole thing because that now it is purely performative. So actually, if you stand by what you mean, then let's see more action and we don't need to worry about the performance on the pitch because that's all it is. And I think they should start going down the road of what the Dallas Mavericks have done and just do away with the anthem in the first place. And I think that's a better approach for me.
I mean, I feel you on the anthem. It's slightly different because this was international football. It wasn't club level, but...
The anthem
at club level has always pissed me off. But
No, you're right.
It's slightly different. But anyway, moving on.
Sorry, moving on.
Moving on. As you can tell, this is relatively football after dark. We've all had a drink.
It's been a long week.
It's been a long week. It's Friday night. State of the Lionesses. Lionesses special. Flo, it's been 350 days since the Lionesses played any competitive football. And here we are. Northern Ireland in St. George's Park, Tuesday. Are you excited? What are your first takes about kind of seeing England play another team for the first time in a year?
I am excited. I'm a little bit nervous and quite worried because not only is it the first bit of competitive football that they've played in nearly a year, but so much has happened in that time. We've obviously had a global pandemic, so there's that. We've had three different assistant managers in that time, actually. Well, we're now on to our third. So we started the year, the period with Bev Priestman. We then got Rhianne Skinner, and we now have Rhianne Wilkinson. So we've got... Two Rhiannes, a Bev, and a packet of Chris. We've had, three assistants in that time. We are now on our... Technically, I guess three managers, because we had the announcement of Serena Wiegman, who's yet to take up her post, and we've now got Hege Riese.
So odd. The timing is so
interim.
Odd.
And, yeah, it's just... It's just really rubbish. So to then add all that together and having not played competitive football, I am quite worried about an upset and the impact of that mere months away from the Olympics and about a year and a couple of months away from a home Euros. It is quite worrying. And I think, I know Kate Borsay's mentioned this on the Offside Rule WSL podcast about how frustrating it is because England men never would have been put in this position, never would have been in limbo Check. Like this ahead of a home tournament. Can you imagine if England were hosting the World Cup or the Euros? Obviously, I know Euro 2020 is kind of all over the place and we are technically hosting major games in it, but hosting a whole tournament and they would be put in this position where they don't even have their...
Play a game for a year.
They don't even play a game for a year and they don't have their manager, like a manager. They don't know who their manager for Team GB. They still don't know who the manager for Team GB is going to be. And that was supposed to be announced in November. I mean,
Team GB is almost a totally separate... Let's try and keep this to just
Okay.
State the Lionesses.
But I'm just talking about in term. I'm just talking about Lionesses in terms of a camp, a group, togetherness,
right.
culture, everything that comes under that package. And having a good performance at the Olympics will have a good impact on the chance of the Euros. So the two are interconnected. And I just do think you just wouldn't see this happen. And I think to go back to what I kind of touched on with Vlatko and the way he's leading that group, who've now had, you know, a fair amount of time together with him, camps and games to bed in and get used to each other. And this is the complete opposite. I mean, if the Olympics happen, do not foresee Team GB doing very well. And I am really concerned that they might not do well at the Euros. And the objective of that tournament is to win it. And it is quite worrying now, the current situation. I think Hege Riise is a fantastic appointment as interim manager. You know, maybe someone you would have considered giving the job to as one of the candidates instead of Serena Wiegmann. But at the same time, she's not got a lot of time. She's only coming in temporarily. How much do you want her to do? It's just a mess. And, haven't stopped yet.
Northern Ireland are
in really good form. Northern Ireland are full of beans. The only upside we can hope is that it's been a while since Northern Ireland booked that playoff spot and they had that kind of, you know, moment together and that historic thing, and you know, they brought them all together. They've had a bit of break and a bit of downtime from that, so I would say that's the only upside for England. Is, you know, the bubble may have burst a little bit for Northern Ireland and they're coming together for the first time in a while as well, so that could be what they hope, you know, play into their advantage, I guess.
We've gone over kind of the squad and Ebony and Emmy Sabin announcement and the lack of diversity and who's in and who's out. Beth Mead being an omission, but then coming back into the squad due to Fran Kirby pulling out. News aside, Flo, when you look at these 21 players, what are the big needs or gaps that you see? Let's stick with kind of 21, 23 players, hypothetically, that you think England need or could look to include in a future lineup.
So I would say there's just one quite big gap for me, and it's more a positional gap rather than an individual. Like, it's, you know, whole. For me, it's the whole of the left-hand side.
Interesting. You're talking about left-sided players in general or left-footed players?
Bit of both, really.
Okay.
Good players that can play on the left.
Cool.
I think England have played to their strengths, which is, you know, obviously what you would do. And the strength is on the right-hand side. The World Cup was all about bronze and Paris. Most of the attacks came through that right-hand channel. And now, with the growth of Chloe Kelly this season, the right's got even better. And we're going to see that the best thing about City is that we have so many of these players playing together. Bronze and Kelly playing together on the right-hand side. Yes, hit me.
Two things. One, Lauren Hemp plays on the left.
Yeah, I'll come on to Lauren Hemp.
Two, Chloe Kelly played on the left for Everton and she used to cut in on her right foot. It's only at City she's become more of an out and more of an assisting kind of like outside right winger.
Yes, but this season her strength has been on the right-hand side.
No doubt.
She's shown that strength and she's playing in a system that is really effective. So for me, I would just drop her in that same system for England. you got Ellen White in the middle, Lucy Bronze, and I would put Ella Toon behind Chloe Kelly.
So my question to you would be, who gets in to solve this left-handed crisis, as you put it?
Well, on my piece of paper, I've put Beth Mead on the left, behind Lauren Hemp. So 4-3-3, Alex Greenwood.
Whoa, let's not get to the 11s yet for okay. Tuesday. I'm just, so Beth, you're saying Beth Mead should be in the 21, regardless of Frank
yes,
Kirby being
Yes, I think she should. I think she's the best left-sided midfielder if you're playing Lauren Hemp as a kind of left-sided forward. So Beth Mead would sit behind her. I also think that, yes, I think Alex Greenwood has had a really good season and she's proved me wrong in lots of ways. I still think her and Demi Stokes aren't that great. In terms, sorry, that comes harsh. Across as quote. Sorry, that comes across as harsh.
I thought you were about to end that with a Demi Stokes compliment, but you just went and threw them both under the bus.
No, I meant to say left back is by far the weak link in that back four. So I think when you add the weakness at left back with the weakness in left midfield, there's just a lot to be exploited on that left-hand side. And yes, I think Alice Greenwood has been really good this season. And what she does bring is that backup at centre-back. So she's so versatile. And Demi Stokes is also good. But I do think that left-hand side is the weak link.
This isn't necessarily my biggest problem with the England team, but something I'm going to bring up because I think it's part of the conversation. From what I can see, there's only six players who have over 50 caps, and there's a potential of six players who have never made a cap or will be making their debut on Tuesday. How does that make you feel? Do you think that's an issue? Experience?
I think experience is an issue, yeah, and I think it comes down to what I said about the team just not having played together that long as well. I think that is a massive issue. I think a lot of those keepers wouldn't be there when...
I'm not just talking about the keepers.
I know, but that's where a lot of the lack of experience comes.
For sure. Hampton and McIver haven't made a cap. Roebuck only has five. We assume Roebuck will be the starter.
Yeah. So I think when you take the goalkeepers out of the equation, not too worried, because when I look at the core of that team, the team that I've put together, I don't... Ella Toon, she starts in my team, but she probably wouldn't start in terms of England's best 11. So you don't, you can take her out of the equation as well. Then you've got a fairly experienced setup. Chloe Kelly being the most inexperienced of the
four caps
of the best 11, because I think most people, given her current form, given how well she's playing that position this season, would start Chloe Kelly.
Do you have any other... I love what you said about left side being an issue. Do you have any other major concerns about the England team? Or do you want to move on to the flow starting 11 for Tuesday?
We can move on to starting 11. I'm intrigued to see what your formation would be.
Do you want me to go first? I feel like you've teased a bit. But
I'll go first because I've teased a bit. So, 4-3-3, flame emoji. Ellie Roebuck in goal. Yes, she's only got five caps, but I do think she's the best goalie in the WSL at the moment. McIver, Hampton, Bagley, all pushing her hard, but I just do think she's the best and the most experienced at the top level. Carly Telford, I don't think should be in the England team. I know she brings that experience, but she's barely played much over the last couple of years. And when she has played, she has not shown that much this season. She was bad in the Brighton defeat as well, so I think it was right of Hegeriza to make that decision. I think it was harsh, and maybe you lose some of that guidance that she would bring to this inexperienced group. But I do think Roebuck's been better than Earps has shown flashes this season, but it's still a little bit patchy, still a little bit inconsistent. So Roebuck for me. Back four, that back four pretty much decides itself, maybe bar Alex Greenwood if Demi Stokes was fit, but Lucy Bronze at right back, despite sometimes my apprehension about them, Millie Bright and Steph Horton would be the centre.
Millie Bright is injured for Tuesday, so I'm going to have to pick you up on that.
Oh.
You have to replace her. But I feel you. I feel you on Millie Bright's had a great season.
Okay.
I'm just trying to focus on.
Okay,
Tuesday.
I'll go Leah Williamson then.
All right, yeah.
Okay, sorry, I forgot about that. Alex Greenwood at left back had a very good season. I apologise, Alex, for slagging you off. Then right hand midfield, Ella Toon. I don't think she would start, but I really want to see her get a start. I thought she was good in the Interhouse game at Bet365. I know she can play centrally. She can also play on the left. I think she has played on the left at times, but I would put her out on the right. And I would be intrigued to see what happens with her playing behind Chloe Kelly, but I'm happy to experiment and see what happens. Kind of a bit worried that there might be a bit of a bottleneck situation, but willing to take the risk. Centre of midfield, Jordan Nobbs. Gotta be. She's just so solid, so perfect in that centre of midfield. Yes, you don't have the kind of physicality and experience of Jill Scott, but I just do think she is just such a calming presence as well. She reads the game so well, and she plays such a killer pass into, you know, someone like Ellen White to pick up on.
I couldn't agree more, and I do think Kira Walsh.
Yeah, Kira Walsh was the other option. She would be the other option in that position.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like Kira Walsh also, despite her age, has 29 caps, which in this team makes her, you know, fairly experienced.
Yeah, yeah. So she would probably be my next. If I was playing a 4-4-2, I'd sit her alongside Jordan Nobbs.
Right.
Beth Mead out left, which I've already mentioned. I think she is the strongest left-hand side midfielder at the moment.
A little bit of Arsenal bias coming through, but...
I mean... Literally only two Arsenal players and Williamson. Because I forgot Bright was injured. I don't think Williamson is ready to be in... Despite what I think about Horton and Bright, I do think they are the most reliable partnership at the moment. But I would like to see Williamson push them a bit more and try and claim that place, because I don't think she's done that enough when she has got the opportunity. Sitting in front of Beth Mead is Lauren Hemp. Played so well since coming back from that really shit injury, shown so much potential over the last few years, PFA Young Player of the Year, such a good talent, really good at scoring goals. She's just a complete player. So having that front three that's all City as well, and putting Ellen White in the middle of that three up top, I mean, that is just chef's kiss. And I think, you know, as much as maybe people don't like what Manchester City sound for, or, you know, the I guess moral complexities of global soft power like Manchester City, you can't fault the fact, the impact it would have on England to have so many players that are playing together at club level all the time. It can only be a good thing. It can only be a positive. We've got Roebuck, Horton, Greenwood, Bronze, Kelly, White and Hemp potentially in that starting 11 who all play together. I think that is a really exciting opportunity for the team. So that is my Flames 11.
Love it. Absolutely love it. I got to add an emoji to my team. Maybe I'll add the kind of diamond emoji. Do you know the diamond emoji? I'll add that to my team. So this will be the Flame team versus the diamond team on emojis. I'm playing a 4-3-3 as well, or more like a kind of 4-1-2-3. So kind of, and it's a good place you ended with all the City players, because my team is even more City players. Roebuck in goal.
It's just the City starting 11.
It's pretty much
minus
just the City
Caroline
team.
Weir.
Roebuck in goal, from right to left. Bronze, Williamson, Houghton, Greenwood at left back. Walsh in front of the defence. She's phenomenal. She's had a phenomenal season. Calm, intuitive, cerebral, whatever you want to add. She's great at coming back into the back four, making it a back five, or letting Bronze bomb forward.
She's better than Nobbs defensively, that's for sure.
Yeah, and that's why I think my team's kind of similar to yours, but I think maybe a little bit more defensive.
Mine is like all out attack on Football Manager.
Yeah, I'm a little bit worried about your centre mids. So I would have Walsh in front of the defence, and then I would have, and this is maybe where it gets controversial, I would have Stanway and Ella Toon.
I was thinking about Stanway.
Well, it's another City player, you know.
Yeah, what, you would put her behind Kelly on the right-hand side?
Well, I'd put him almost more of an eight. Like, okay. I would have Stanway and Toon as central midfielders. So you have Walsh as very much a holding midfielder.
Okay.
And then Stanway and Toon are just, they're just turning over possession, committing, feeding the ball very, simple passes.
Your team sounds boring, man.
Well, I think this is the thing.
I think Ella Toon brings that pace and that change of
She leads United in chance creation.
That's what I mean. So I think Toon balances that centre of midfield.
But so does Stanway. I mean, I think since Sam Lewis got injured, Stanway's been a huge help as like a defensive number 10 or a number 8, kind of being a more bullish player off the ball than necessarily being like a creative player on the ball. And that's where I see Stanway and Toon. They're there to turn over possession in midfield. So yeah, I see.
Okay, I'm feeling it. I'm feeling it.
I don't know. I think it's a very counter-attacking team, but I think it's almost designed a little bit like the USA team, where you have like, you know, your Mewis, your Horan, Julie Ertz. You have this like tough midfield that then lets the front three just be all-out attack. So you have Walsh, Stanway, and Toon as a midfield three, and then Kelly, White, Hemp, same as you, up top, right to left. Kelly on the right, White down the middle, Hemp on the left. They're all so informed. They've been incredible the last 2 months. And I think, yeah, for me, it's a slightly fragmented team because, like, I think Walsh, Stanway, and Toon are going to break up the ball a lot. And you know, Walsh, Stanway, and Toon are probably the youngest midfield England have ever had if you did play all three. But I think it would be, you know, Ellen White. I mean, it's the youngest midfield attack ever, you know, if you include Kelly and Hemp in there as well. But I think Ellen White just about keeps her place. Obviously, with Nikita Paris unavailable. But I think Ellen White keeps her place. She's in form. And I think, yeah, you get a nice balance between the midfield doing the dirty work and the front three just being allowed to create.
Yeah. 2 weeks ago, Ellen White would have not been my starting player in the middle. I probably would have paid Beth England or Frank Kirby if she was fit. Obviously, she had to go home, sadly, today. But Ellen White, the last couple of weeks, has completely changed the narrative of her season for me. I just think she's shown elements of her game that I had kind of written off. And I think she's turning back the years a little bit.
I would have been very close to playing Beth England, but I think having Kelly, White and Hemp at the same club was kind of the decider for me.
Yeah, I mean, that, you just can't buy that shit.
Exactly. And obviously Ebony Salmon as well, coming in really close. And like I said on previous podcasts, I think from a tactical point of view, Ebony Salmon gives you something different. So always that as well.
Yeah, I'm just intrigued to see how Salmon fits in a team that is on the offensive. Because I know Matt Beard has been very clear that she is not just an off-the-shoulder type of player. But we kind of yet to see that from her game yet, because she's never been played in that way. So, well, certainly with Bristol City. So I would be intrigued to see how she would fit in maybe a more traditional 4-3-3 kind of more attacking, positive formation, rather than just being like a lone striker up top, trying to create things on the counter or on the break, where it's just like her against the world.
Anyone looking to go and find some Ebony Salmon link-up play when she's not on the counter-attack, I recommend fishing out the Bristol City 2, Tottenham 2 highlights.
Yeah, and I mean, that was the Ebony Salmon show, that game.
The assist she gets for the penalty, so it's not technically an assist, but she plays in Logazzo, who wins the penalty, with a phenomenal like back heel flick 1-2.
Yeah.
And that was some of the best link-up play Ebony Salmon's had all season. So I really recommend going back and checking out that 2-2. It's not on the box score. It's not in the statistics that you'll see out there, but it's a little kind of shining light of what Ebony Salmon can do, not just when she's running down on goal. Well, Flo, let's wrap it up there. I feel like we've gone way longer than we said.
Yeah, we said 20 minutes. We're nearing 45.
Well, we said 25 to 30 in the show notes, and here we are 40 minutes in.
That's what happens when it's relatively after dark. You just don't know what might happen.
Yeah. Well, look, thanks so much for listening and being here with two siblings on a Friday night with nothing better to do than share our love of loser mentality national football time. Yeah, we'll end it there. Flo, have a good night, get some sleep, and I'm sure we'll be watching and speaking on Tuesday as the wonderful England Lionesses take on Northern Ireland and hopefully get a win. Maybe just. Maybe 1-0. Maybe it'll be 1-0.
Oh, I hope not.
Hope not, yeah. All right. Cheers, Po. Take it easy. Good night.